Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle. It's Thursday, November 1st, 2018, and we are taking a break from our standard newscast today for a special half-hour program. Representatives from the Alaska Department of Corrections were in Unalaska this week as the City Council weighed whether to participate in a work release program for inmates. I recently spoke with DOC officials after the Council rejected that proposal in a narrow vote to hear their reactions and what happens next.
Good morning, Unalaska. This is Dean Williams. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Corrections.
And good morning. My name is Michael Zenner. I'm with Wildwood Correctional Complex out of Kenai, and I'm a probation parole officer.
Fantastic. Thank you again for coming in. And this is your third visit now, I believe, to the island in recent months. A lot of folks know what you've been in town talking about, and our discussion will maybe get into a little bit of what happened last night at our special city council meeting. But for folks who are totally unfamiliar, can you give us the basics again? What is this program that you've been in town talking about before we get into what the next step is?
Sure. No. So for the last several years, last 5 years, before I came on, I've been commissioner for the last a little over 2.5 years. But even before I came on, the department was taking prisoners who were starting at the end of their sentence, right, and giving them job opportunity to work in seafood processing plants. We have a lot of seafood processors in this state. We don't have enough workers to fill those jobs. In fact, not even in the country, and that's the reason why in Alaska, as well as other places, they hire people from all over the world to work in these places. And so we need people who are returning citizens out of the prison system to have a job and a place to live. And seafood processors need reliable workers who are motivated to show up every day to work. And so we've been at this effort for about 5 years. Last year, we started a slightly new effort where we're having prisoners returning who actually spend their nights at the bunkhouse. So this entire effort really is based for two reasons, really. One, provide a stable workforce for the seafood processors. But the other thing is our reoffense rate in this state has been very high for over 20 years. And the reason for that is that we're returning people without a job, without a place to live. And when you have those two scenarios, if you have nothing to lose, you've got nothing to lose. And so that's the reason why this is, we launched this program years ago, and the reason why we're pursuing more opportunities now.
You had been proposing this program to the community, sort of, as you were saying, inviting the community to consider it.
Right.
It's already been happening in various forms in Kenai and Cordova. Last night, we saw a resolution come before the council to support the program, which would have allowed four inmates come this A season and work at UNICE, which had expressed interest.
Right.
That resolution failed. Our no vote, one was enough to sink it with only four councilors present last night. Dave Gregory's explanation for his no vote was that he's not sure Unalaska is ready to take on the risk of four inmates, as he phrased it, without first maybe investing more in Unalaska's support infrastructure, citing things like addiction services and counseling. And having worked with this kind of program for 5 years, I wonder what your response is or reaction is to that sort of argument, given what you've seen and what you think we have here in Unalaska.
That's a very fair question, Laura. And I stopped by to see Mr. Gregory before the council meeting because I knew that he expressed some reluctance the last time we were here. And so first of all, let me say, I have the greatest respect for people who may see this differently than I do. This is not a matter of me trying to come into a community and say, this is the way you should do this. I would just say this. So his concern for safety and other things are my concern as well. There's uniform a concern amongst all of us. And Mike, who's been running this program for us for 5 years, you're going to find anybody who's more concerned about safety than us. But here's where I guess I kind of respectfully disagree. You have people in your community right now who come from all over the world with no supervision. You don't know what the backgrounds you're getting for these folks. And we're bringing four people and starting very small that we have vetted very carefully. We watched their behavior. No one's vetted them more carefully than us in terms of how their behavior's been inside the prison walls. And we have a very tried and true method of not only vetting them, but supervising them and working with the companies, and it's done very, very well. We've had great success with Pacific Star in Kenai. Tremendous success. Cordova, we had a kerfuffle with one or two of the guys this summer, but they were using drugs. This is the sort of problem we expected to have. So I'm really firm in my belief that this is the future for us as a department. And because if we're going to improve safety in this state, we have to recognize that we cannot have the reoffense rate that we had before. So while I understand those concerns, I would just say our entire job in this department is mitigating risk. And our entire job, and I would be remiss in my job if I said, hey, let's just keep doing the same thing over and keeping releasing people who have no job, who have no place to live, and expect something to be different with our reoffense rate. So as I said last night, we release 12,000 people from prison every year out of this department, 12,000 sentenced people. Half of them reoffend within the first 6 months. And the reason why is they just don't have anything to lose. They don't have a place to live and a job to have. And the way you make the bend on that is giving people a purpose again. So it doesn't capture everything. I mean, a job and a place to live is not everything. But when you have nothing, it's quite a bit. And so I understand the risk issue, but we've really been dealing with that since we started this program. And it's what we do in the department. We mitigate risk every single day with the 4,500 inmates who are in our custody.
Taking that into account, I wonder, to go a little further with that kind of question or concern, Kenai and Cordova, do the folks there in the experience that that they've had in those processing plans, have folks there relied a lot on support services like counseling or addiction? I don't know if that is something that has been available at those facilities, Mike, or if people use them a lot.
Sure. Well, I'll talk first about what we do and some of the risk matrices and getting to the point to where an individual will be eligible for the program. First and foremost, the overwhelming majority of the offenders that are going to come out and participate in a program like this have completed several programs to get to this point. They have been through their addiction treatments. They have been through, reentry programs already. And they are pretty much at a point where they're ready to reenter into. Now, continuing care is something we're always concerned with and something that they would benefit from. In Kenai and in Cordova, they were able to. In fact, they came to me seeking out such things like, I would like to go to a continuing care thing. I would like to go to an AA meeting. I would like to go to an NA meeting. And we would allow for certain times where they would be able to go to do those things. In this area, if those services weren't immediately available, it would not make me overly concerned that they weren't able to do that for that six-month period that they were here. Like I said, the majority of them are already to the point where they are ready for work, and they are ready to get out into the community.
Some folks who posed that concern were sort of critics of the overall program, and it seems like that might be a response to them. But I also want to put to you folks who were supportive of the program but also had concerns maybe less about addiction services, immediate kind of risk mitigators, but more holistic things like church, mentorship, things that we talked a little bit last night.
Right.
Are those things that are in place in your facility?
Absolutely. As well as they would be, the offenders that would participate in this program would be fully available to go and do those types of things like go to church, go to an AA meeting, or if it's a support group meeting. They ask me about volunteer opportunities in the community. If an offender has the opportunity to do things like community work service or community volunteer things, they enjoy that type of opportunity outside of their regular duties that they would be assigned at work. And they're seeking out those types of things. So definitely something within the terms and conditions and within their work schedules they'd be able to do.
And you have responded to this next question I'm going to pose to you quite a few times, but it does continue to be sort of a top question. So just since we're talking about it, tell us once again about the monitoring efforts that would be in place and what you saw when you were able to test things over the last day or so.
Sure. I'll maybe have Mike follow up with me on this. But we brought two sets of different equipment out. One was what we call a group guard, which is it's a general, I call it the dog lot, really. It's kind of an area that you're allowed to be in this area or you have to be back in a certain area. So it really enforces curfew and this is the zone you're allowed to be in. And so we tested that equipment. It's not cell-based. It's kind of an older technology, but it works well. We tried it yesterday, and it works fine here in Unalaska. So that's a very basic technology. It doesn't tell us where people are somewhere and going, but you could envision if someone is, you know, has a 24-hour day and they're working 12 hours a day, well, we know they're going to be supervised by someone in the company for the 12 hours, and they're going to the meal hall, but you have to be back in your room or back in this building with the remaining 8 hours or 7 or 8 hours or something. So it makes sure that we have people complying with the curfew of when they're back in. So it doesn't, you don't have free time running around. You can't run around to town. And we do allow that later once someone has been in the program and they've been working at the processor and they ask for a little bit more free time to take a walk, because that's not something they've been able to do for a long time. So we dole out responsibilities there as they show themselves to be more trustworthy. So we tried that equipment. We also actually tried a second equipment that is a cell-based that really monitors where people are at. And much to our surprise, even though it dropped in and out, which is kind of what's standard here for Unalaska, as I've discovered, it actually still tracked quite well locations. So we put it on one of us or with a bracelet, and we went different locations. And then we had the company sort of tell us, because we didn't have access to the software here, but it tracked amazingly well where we were at. So that's a second, if in fact this goes somewhere, I'm probably moving this to that, but I have to go through a separate RFP process to make that work, which is, this is just sorting these business things out. But so it really actually went amazingly well. Mike, I don't know if there's anything else to add.
So one thing to add to the technology as far as GPS goes is, with the GPS technology, we're able to set things that are called inclusion and exclusion zones. For instance, if an offender was scheduled to go to a church service for a couple of hours on a Sunday afternoon, they could go to the church service, and then as they're walking down the road and this thing is tracking them, we could have pre-programmed what are called exclusion zones. For instance, if we wanted everybody to be excluded from the bar, or excluded from a particular store, or a neighborhood, or whatever it is, we could pre-design those zones in, and the second that offender walked into that zone, we would then be getting an alert. And that is the benefit of having that GPS technology.
Looking ahead to that GPS technology, it sounds like that's a very interesting thing that you guys are exploring and maybe already using elsewhere in the other programs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the first one that might be more eligible to us now, it's not based on cell, but I do want to ask, we had landlines down not too long ago at all for hours, at least here at the radio station and a few other places in town. Does that give you any pause? We had a leak at the powerhouse.
Not really. Even if we had an event like that happen, we would just work with the company to say, hey, it's are they on the job, and we would adapt to that. I guess I would just go back over one thing about this. The people who are coming to any of the communities in Kenai and Cordova, there's no workers that any company is going to have that are better monitored, that are better supervised than the folks that we're sending them. And honestly, if you talk to PacStar, who's giving nothing but ringing endorsements for how the program has worked, is it because there's a lot riding on this for the people who are returning. This is a big deal. If you've made a serious mistake in your life, you've gone to prison, and you come back out, there's a lot riding on this. And we make it a big deal for returning citizens, too, to say, wow, this is the only thing I have. And so I really want to remind people that it's not only the vetting that we do to see how they've done with us in the time they've been with us, but they have a lot to lose if this doesn't work out. This may be their only last opportunity to make something of their life. And I brought a couple of guys in here who have been to PacStar this year, and you could hear them talk about it. In fact, that's really kind of what is the game changer. When you hear the guys who are like, listen to me, I made a serious mistake. I accept full responsibility for everything I've done. I totally blew it. I was drunk. I shouldn't have, and these are the people that we're looking for. And they just want to find a way back to society. They just want to find a way back to normal. They're highly motivated. It doesn't guarantee that none of them are going to have temptations or problems. And I'm not making any false promises here. But they're highly motivated, and it's very highly structured. And I'm telling you that there's just worked out. It's worked out very well in the other communities where we've tried it.
Well, you're listening to KUCB here, 89.7 FM. We have folks from the DOC, the State Department of Corrections, in the studio right now live talking to us about the inmate work release program that's been kind of before the city council, before the community now for a little while. The program went before the council last night via a resolution of support that would have kind of let things go forward with the local leader's stamp of approval. That did fail in a narrow vote. The dissenting vote, Councillor Dave Gregory kind of mentioned that, you know, he's not opposed to the program outright. He might be interested in things going forward in the future, that he'd like to start slower, so to speak. Based on what the program is right now, is there an option for, quote unquote, starting slower? Is there any way to ramp up or as it exists right now, is it kind of an all or nothing thing?
No, I wouldn't say it's all or nothing. I mean, I think we're looking at Accutan still as a viable possibility. I think we have a really great relationship with Trident, to their credit. And so we're going to continue on where we're welcomed and where people understand the benefit. I can tell you, I think the seafood processors, especially with their difficulty of hiring employees, understand the benefit because I'm willing to adjust resources. I mean, I'm putting money back into the community right now. Probably starting in November, you're going to get $50,000, $60,000. I mean, it's not a great deal of money, but that we're putting into the police department just to stand up electronic monitoring here in the community. So people who have alternatives, you know, who don't want to come, who we don't want to send to Anchorage, who the community doesn't want to send to Anchorage to do a 60-day jail term, now we'll have the option of doing electronic monitoring in the community. That's all good stuff. So there were some things we've changed. I mean, I would have hoped that we would have had a unanimous vote sort of with the four council members yesterday. Clearly, I'm a little disappointed about that, but I'm not discouraged. And here's why. First of all, the community's been nothing but just fantastic in terms of open idea, and the support last night was really moving to me as a commissioner, because sometimes you go into community and you're like, I try to tell people, I'm not selling anything here. I'm just inviting you in to what I think is a solution for the state as a whole and how we do something about this terrible reoffense rate. And you're bringing people into your community, thousands of people that from all over the world that you don't know anything about. Can we get some Alaskans back to work who need a second chance? And I think even Councilman Gregory understood that. He agreed with that. I think his other reluctance, I get it. I don't necessarily agree with him on all those points, but that doesn't discourage me. Or I think his intentions are very honorable, even though I disagree with some of these conclusions. So we're going to go where we can. I think we're still going to be able to offer the community sort of electronic monitoring of local sentenced people. We're also helping the community stand up right now. My staff are over there training people right now about ACOMS, which is our state offender management system, which the community has not been using. So they're on that system now. So anyone who books in, they're going to have all the information we have as a department. That has not been the case in the past with Unalaska. So there's some really positive things that are still going on as a result of our visits here. And that's all good. And I was really moved yesterday, and one last note kind of on this issue, is that by people's testimony about having been in the system or realized the system had, you know, failed before them. They had personal stories about how the system failed, and I was like, that's exactly right. And so I keep telling people we just cannot plow the same ground over and over again and just release people without a plan, without a job, and think things are going to be okay. And they're going to be breaking into our houses. They're going to have repeat offenders. And there was testimony last night about that as well. So if we want to interrupt that and change that, and believe me, if any of my family members or your family members were arrested for a crime, made a serious mistake, you'd want a way to figure out how they could get back to society again. Because when you have everything rightfully taken away from you as a result of a crime, you have to make a plan for reentering. You have to make a plan for renormalization again. And so that was still very, very encouraging to me. And to hear the heart of people last night was still very moving.
and speaking to recidivism and the state's long time and high reoffense rate, that's obviously a statewide issue. Beyond Unalaska, you're talking to Akutan. I don't know if that's for a season. Are you talking to other communities too? Tell us about kind of beyond Unalaska, what some of your efforts are.
Yeah, well, we're talking to Akutan about a season, and I think we have a commitment there. I think next year in Kenai, we had, and Mike will correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think we had 18 people, including two women, who were working in Kenai at PacStar last year. They have basically told Mike, double it, send us as many as you can, and we'll take them. And so these are people, again, the same exact people that we would be considering for Unalaska or Akutan, or people that have a history of good behavior who are, you know, within the last year or approximately a year, within the last year of their sentence. So we're going to go. PacStar has been nothing but encouraging, and I'm going to expand there. The reason why we're considering multiple communities, I think there's just some real benefit, and it also allows me to realign resources. So can you imagine if PacStar in Kenai, we go from 18 and they want 36 or 40 next year. That really gets my attention to say, hey, you know, maybe, first of all, will Mike need more help on doing the program, which is, he's probably not in his head, yes. But in addition to that, then maybe we stand up other additional services besides. Maybe we do on-site sort of peer-oriented treatment services or substance abuse programming, which is very research-driven, very successful. So I want to switch money into communities where these folks are at, because that's where the victory's at, quite frankly. And so the money will follow, and I've committed myself. I mean, this is the third visit we've been out here. Didn't go exactly the way I wanted to last night, but I still think there's some gains to be made. I know this, and I know the real work in terms of people staying out of trouble is in the communities where they're landing. And we do good things beyond the walls. I'm not discouraging that, but we need to do much more in the communities where people land. And so I'm willing to realign our very, restrictive state funding right now. But I'm very much believe that that's the money should follow those efforts.
Akutan, I'm just curious, how many folks are you looking to start there?
Four. Just the same, yeah, four. And it's just really just a pilot. And one other shout out to Trident, but also UNICE. UNICE was response to this, and their letter from Tom, who I'm not sure what his position is, but he was
president.
Yeah. I mean, just very moving. And these companies like UNICE and Trident they want to be good social partners. They just not want to make a buck. They want to be, you know, we kind of get to know their culture too. They want to, you know, sustainable fish, all those things that they're very concerned about. And they're very concerned about being good partners and being good partners. How can we help socially in terms of, can we help the state do something about this reoffense rate? And at the same time, do we get good workers at it? So that's kind of that forward thinking. And that's been, I guess, really the other encouraging part of this journey is kind of getting to know that business and getting to know their need for reliable workers and their heart for their communities. I mean, that's just, I shouldn't be surprised, but I was moved by the fact that by some of their testimony and by how they really came along with this. I mean, we spent the entire day with their security staff kind of working out some bugs, and they're not put out. They're just really, it was really kind of, I don't know if you have anything more to say about it, Mike. They've just been fantastic.
Yeah, that's good. That's pretty much covered it.
Last time you were here, we were still in a three-way governor's race. And there was the potential that we would have the same governor who would, you know, theoretically continue his support for such things. Now we know that we're going to have a different governor. And regardless of Unalaska's status, I guess, how do you think that may affect your work and this kind of program going forward, depending on which way this election goes?
Well, since day one, I've had to approach this job that we're going to chart a course, that's a course of improvement, of reflection upon who we are as a department, about the results that we've had as a department, which haven't been very good in the past, and what should we do about it. And I've had to take that responsibility with the knowledge that maybe someone else might disagree with me, but quite frankly, the results should speak for themselves. and also to ask my successor, whoever that might be. I'm not sure if it's going to be me with a new governor or not. These are positions that, you know, you approach these things with a light hand, you know, an open hand. But even if it's not me, I think that where we're going in this effort is clear the results. I mean, if you don't believe Mike when he talks about the program, go talk to PacStar. So anyone who would be in my job or any governor who would be in my job, I mean, the governor, Governor Walker, was clearly highly supportive of this effort because he knew what our reoffense rate was too. He also knew that some of the issues I faced as commissioner, that there was a lot of incidents inside the walls. And there's reasons, a lot of reasons for that. One of the reasons, there's multiple, but one of the reasons is idle hands. And I guess my daddy was right when he said idle hands are the devil's workshop, because with too many idle hands, you don't have enough things for people to do, and there's mischief and trouble. And so I'm hoping that no matter who's in the governor's chair, that he would have an opportunity to not only talk to me about it or Mike about it, or talk to PacStar about this program, because I think the proof is in the pudding. I think the results that we're seeing, as Mike talked about, the reoffense rate, the people who are leaving with a job, is about half what it is for the general population. The fact that we've had no major events, as Mike pointed out yesterday at the council meeting, of any of these folks, except for drug-related things that they're using, which is what we would expect for addicts who have drug issues, and they're going to fall off the wagon, and they're going to have to rope them back in again. And we have a track record in this program, and I'm hoping that a new governor would recognize that, and I think they will. We have to go the right course, no matter. I can't over-predict that. I can't over-analyze what someone else might think of what we're doing. What I can analyze is, are we getting the results we want now out of things? Do I have people come along encouraging, saying, yeah, this is working? And also ask the inmates, I mean, is this working for you? And the overwhelming response is that, thank God I have this job. Thank God I have now a vision. And because many of them stay on in the job after their time is up. And that's all those things. I think will, I hope, secure the effort because I just don't think we can turn back.
And kind of returning to the local side to wrap up our discussion, that's a great kind of state perspective to keep in mind as we continue thinking about this. For now, Unalaska failed to pass a resolution last night, but there was a lot of support for it, as well as criticism, and a lot of support on the council. Our councilors, Sherry Coleman, Dennis Robinson, and Roger Rowland had previously expressed some support for it, a cautious optimism, he had said. So it looks like if it were to come to another vote, which Mayor Frank Kelty has said he'd be interested in doing, that it seems like it could pass should the full council revisit the issue once again. With that kind of in-between situation, what happens next from your perspective?
Well, I think it's kind of in the council's hands. I think it's in the community's hands. I think we have given opportunity to share in an effort together. I'm hoping that there will be reflection on this. I think it started a conversation. I think the level of support that I did feel about it understands that there must be second chances for people returning. And I heard uniformly that people believed in second chances. But I think that has to translate something. We just can't say, well, we believe in second chances, and that doesn't really mean anything different. And you take second chances with real sense of responsibility in terms of mitigating those risks. But I tell people this, that, look, they're getting out. And if you think that it's going well now, I can tell you it's not. And so I'm going to let the community kind of rest where they're at right now. And we're going to continue on with Accutan and Kenai and Cordova. And we may explore, you know, Seward and some other options to have process. There's also people in Ketchikan. There's places all up and down the coast that I'm going to start looking at. And that's kind of where we're going to leave it at. And there's no certainly no hard feelings on my part. Like I said, this has been a tremendous response, and I've met great people. The mayor and others and the other council people have just all been, and even Mr. Gregory, had a great talk with him, even though we disagreed on some things. I just really am encouraged by it. It's just great to come into I lived here for over 30 years. I haven't been to Unalaska ever, and here I've been three times in as many months. And it's just really neat to show up at a community like this and sort of see the kind of people that live here. And it makes me proud to be a fellow Alaskan. And so I'll leave it all in your hands, and we're not going anywhere, and we'll be around for further discussions in the future.
That was State Corrections Commissioner Dean Williams and Probation Officer Michael Zenner discussing a work release program for inmates finishing their sentences. On Tuesday, the Unalaska City Council voted against joining that program ahead of the winter fishing season, but Mayor Frank Kelty has said he may bring the issue before the council again. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM.